assistant directors here at the Challenge, and David's given me the opportunity to preach tonight. In light of the topic we're talking about tonight, which the title is Unheard of Trust, and we'll be kind of looking at the Sabbath, and that'll make more sense as we go along. I want to start out just a little bit different. If everybody, just for a second, just could close their eyes, all right? And feel free to bow your heads if you like, but just close your eyes. And I know many of you probably have got tests coming up, or papers, or assignments, or projects, or who knows what else on your plate. And it was all you could do just to come tonight. Really, just to give up that just a little bit of time to come tonight. So if you would, just try to block all that out of your head just for a moment. Don't worry, it'll still be there when you bring it back to your mind. And just, everybody, take a deep breath. And just let it out. Father, I pray tonight that as we just take a few moments, Lord, to hear from your word, you would give me the words to speak, and that what I say would be helpful and useful, and that we might learn something more about your love and your character, and how you treat us and how you love us. Pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. So we've been going through Exodus. So Exodus 31 is the chapter we'll be in tonight. So I know some of the guys will be coming around with Bibles. If you need one, feel free to borrow one of those. So we'll be looking at Exodus chapter 31, and we'll read 12 through 17. And the Lord said to Moses, "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, 'Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death. Therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." As I was preparing for this message, I was talking to one of our staff members, Allie. She was telling me about, you know, her new house and stuff, and their refrigerator they have in this house. It's got a very interesting feature on it. It's got something called a Sabbath mode. I thought, whoa, what is that? And basically, it's a switch you flip, and on the Sabbath day, which in Jewish weekly events is on Saturday, the light will not turn on when you open up the refrigerator door. Now, you might be tempted to laugh, and I don't laugh. It's interesting, right? That's pretty extreme on how far some take the Sabbath and what you can and cannot do. But for some of us, maybe we're on the opposite extreme of that, where it doesn't really matter what you do. And so I want to go through what exactly does the Sabbath mean tonight, and how maybe it's one of the greatest signs of trust that we have in the Lord. So we just read that passage. And so just to give you a few points on what did the Sabbath mean to the Israelite people after they came out of Egypt. So the first point is the Sabbath was to be a day of physical rest. In fact, this is not the first time the Sabbath had been mentioned in the book of Exodus. If you go all the way back to Exodus 20, where you see the Ten Commandments, one of them is to obey the Sabbath, right? So Exodus 20, verse 10, says, "But the Sabbath day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you." So why would God care so much about his people resting, right? Why? We oftentimes think God solely in his effects in the spiritual realm. But God cares about all of his creation. He created physical creation. He created us, right? So he cares even about the physical aspects of our lives. But one thing we got to remember is where did the Israelite people come from? They were in slavery, right? As one pastor describes it, they made bricks, more bricks, all day, every day. It was work, work, work. An infatuation with the bottom line, with no restraints on how to get there. Thus, there was no rest for them. They were to work till exhaustion. In fact, the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, said, "The Israelite people are getting too numerous. We will enslave them, and then we will work them to death," basically, so that their numbers would diminish from the hard labor they would be forced to do. Unfortunately, it backfired, and they actually kept growing and growing. But that was Pharaoh's goal, was let's just work them to death. God is the one who designed us. He knows the needs of our minds and our bodies, right? Psalm 23, which is often looked at and solely just the spiritual aspects of God taking care of us and feeding us, which is absolutely true, and that's probably the primary focus of Psalm 23, but it also paints a very cool picture, very good picture of God taking care of us both spiritually and physically. I like how the New Living Translation, it puts it, "The Lord is my shepherd, I have all that I need. He lets me rest in green meadows. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength." Now, this is in contrast to other cultures around the Israelite people. In fact, you might find this interesting, the idea of a day off, a weekly day off, is really unheard of in this time period. There was no day off. There was no law that said, oh, you have to have a day off, or you know, the government's going to slap your employer with a fine or whatever. No, there was nothing like that. In fact, up until the Israelites came into Mount Sinai and received this law from the Lord, that was, many scholars, some liberal scholars might argue against this, but it seems to be the truth, is that that was actually when the first day off, weekly day off, came to be. It's when God gave this command. Now, there were other religious holidays in other nations, and of course they took days off for that, but if there was no idea of this day off. And in fact, if you took a day off, well, you didn't get paid, for one thing, right? In which some of y'all, when you take days off, you don't get paid. But in this case, their livelihood was totally based on this. They couldn't afford to take a day off every week. So this put them in contrast to the surrounding nations that, wait, their religion called for this. Their God called for them to have a weekly day off. But not only just physical rest was it about. The Sabbath was holy and set aside for worship and focus on the Lord. Verse 14 of chapter 31, it says, "You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people." 6 days of the week, the people did ordinary work that had to be done for their own livelihood and their own needs, right? But the last was to be fully devoted to the Lord. It was holy. So we see physical rest had another reason. If they were engaged in their ordinary work through the entire week without any days off, they wouldn't have any time to actually focus on the Lord, to worship him. And so God set aside this day to be holy, Saturday, the last day of the week. All through the Old Testament, God would often designate things as ordinary and holy, right? So there were certain foods that were ordinary, that the Jewish people couldn't eat. They were unclean, right? Even the Ark of the Covenant, it was holy, and so not anybody could just touch it or they would die. Only certain people could. So the Sabbath itself was a holy day. And so to profane it, to disobey God on it, to trespass against its holiness, was to receive death. An example of this can be seen in Numbers 15, 32 through 36. It says, "One day while the people of Israel were in the wilderness, they discovered a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. The people who found him doing this took him before Moses, Aaron, and the rest of the community. They held him in custody because they did not know what to do with him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man must be put to death. The whole community must stone him outside the camp." So the whole community took the man outside the camp and stoned him to death, just as the Lord commanded Moses. Now, when you read that, you're like, it was sticks. Come on. The guy was picking up sticks. Why in the world would that be deserving of death? That seems very unjust, disproportional to the crime he committed. But, you know, in the beginning, it was just a piece of fruit, right? That Eve plucked from the tree, and both her and Adam ate. It was just a piece of fruit. It was perhaps just a little bit of jealousy that Cain had towards his brother Abel that maybe brought him to the brink of killing him. Maybe that was just the little incident that happened, the first murder out of how many people live in the world that caused the world to be filled with violence and a flood to have to be issued forth to wipe earth clean of this. It was just one man, right, who insignificant, who was born in a manger and lived a perfect life and died. No one really, probably a lot of people didn't know who he was outside of the promised land, right? He was just one person, one man who brought salvation to the world. You see, the small things sometimes amount to big things. And this man was apparently saying to God, "No, I'm going to pick up sticks even though I know I'm not supposed to do this." You see, my next point is probably the most important point. Now, we looked at the two aspects of the Sabbath, but obedience to these two aspects, both resting physically and being a holy day, showed something specific about the Israelites, which thus proved they had a covenant, proved the covenant the people had with God. Their obedience showed that they trusted the Lord, that they believed him. Check out verse 13 of the passage we've been studying. "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, 'Above all, you shall keep my Sabbath, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you.' Therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath," this is jumping to verse 16, "observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever." When they intentionally disobeyed or forgot the Sabbath, they were essentially saying God was not trustworthy, that he couldn't take care of them, that it was up to them to take care of themselves, and to sacrifice even one day of work was to invite poverty and disaster. Or perhaps it was more devious, as you saw in the book of Amos, when the prophet says that the people were basically saying, "Oh, that the Sabbath would end so we can get back to making money." And further than that, get back to cheating people. It's like, come on, I wish the Sabbath was over so I can just get back to this. Their trust really was shown by them obeying the Sabbath. And so when they didn't, they essentially said that God, he's a liar. He's not real. Their trust also showed another distinction between God and the gods of Egypt and probably many other nations at the time. Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann puts it in his book called Sabbath as Resistance. "The gods of Egypt and Pharaoh are gods who demand endless produce and who authorize endless systems of production that are in principle insatiable. Pharaoh is the manager, constantly driving the slaves in Egypt to feed the system of production for the glory of the Egyptian empire. Here, there's no rest. There is constant toil. Pharaoh is the hard taskmaster, and people are a commodity. But the God of Israel is different," he says. This God is relational, not a God of commodity. The divine rest on the seventh day of creation has made clear, A, that Yahweh is not a workaholic, B, that Yahweh is not anxious about the full functioning of creation, and C, that the well-being of creation does not depend on endless work." When the Israelites disobeyed this command, they were basically saying to the rest of the nations around them, like, our God's no different. This is just like your God. Work, work, work. God's glory and power is not maintained by the endless toil of human hands. That if they were to stop serving him for even a second, he would disappear. But in fact, it is God who sustains man. Now, coming into the New Testament, I really don't have enough time to really go through some of the things that happened in the New Testament that talks about the Sabbath, but suffice it to say that when by the time the New Testament rolled around, the time of the New Testament that took place in, the Jewish people had added rule upon rule on the Sabbath and what you could do and not do on the Sabbath. They became slaves to the Sabbath. By the time Jesus was walking here, they were slaves to the Sabbath, slaves again. And Jesus had many things to say about this if you read through the Gospels. Much of the requirements of the Mosaic Law we find in the Old Testament, you see, are fulfilled once and for all in Christ. And his sacrifice, are no longer necessary because of Christ. So we see that the Jewish people, they put all these rules on there, but basically when you get into the early church, you start to see this. The specific Sabbath law given in the Old Testament is no longer applicable to Christians today. Now, hear me on that. The specific Sabbath law I'm talking about. Paul in Colossians 2, 16 through 17 affirms that we should not let anyone judge us because we do not observe the Sabbath or Jewish religious holidays. Nor anywhere in the Bible will you see that Sunday is now the new Sabbath, but for Christians. However, the early church chose Sunday to worship together on because that was the day that Christ rose from the dead. There is a precedent for this because in Acts 20, verse 7, and 1 Corinthians 16, 2, or even John referring to Sunday as the Lord's day in Revelation 1, 10. This was the day the Lord rose, so it was special, and it was the day they chose to worship on. Now, before you go dancing right out here and say, oh, great, Stanley's saying we don't have to go to church anymore on Sunday, and we can sleep in, and it's great. That is not what I'm saying, right? It's not what I'm saying. Though the law for the Sabbath is no longer there, the principles of the Sabbath should still be followed. And in fact, the New Testament calls us to that. So what are the principles? Principle number one. We should be setting aside at least one day to focus on God in corporate and personal worship. For many of this is Sunday, right? Because this is the day that your church has chosen to worship on. Early church worship on Sunday, so even in this day, the church mainly worships on Sunday. Now, for some, maybe it's a Saturday evening service and that's totally cool. But you should be setting aside one day to focus the majority of your time on the Lord in both corporate and personal worship. This principle is commanded in the New Testament when Hebrews 10:25 tells us to not to give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. So the question is this day different than other days of the week? Because if it looks just like every other day, then are you really focusing on the Lord? Now, for some of you, you may have to work on Sunday, right? Maybe all you can do is go to corporate worship and then head off to work. But what can you do differently during that time, even at work, maybe during your lunchtime, during your breaks, to focus your heart on the Lord? Now, we can't be legalistic about this, but some mind should be paid to it, or every day we'll just end up being the same. No focus on the Lord. Principle two, we need physical and mental rest. God the Father rested after creation, even though he never tires. And the Bible identifies this as an example that we should follow, we who do get tired. Jesus called his disciples to rest after he sent them out. And he himself rested too. Remember on that boat in the middle of the lake, a huge storm came up, and what was Jesus doing? He was sleeping in the back. You see, the world we live in is not too unlike the ancient Egyptian world. We work and work and work to get ahead, to be successful, to get the highest grades in class, to get that internship or that job. And achieving those things are good. Don't hear me that saying, that, oh, that's a wrong motive. No, those things are good, and we should. As the Old Testament scholar I mentioned earlier, Walter Brueggemann, writes, this creates a society of 24/7 multitasking in order to achieve, accomplish, perform, and possess. It is a weight that leads people to do unthinkable things, like jump off bridges and sacrifice their children, whether literal or metaphorical. And I would say even perhaps sacrifice their time spent with God and serving in worship. Now, perhaps this day coincides with your day of worship, or perhaps there's another day of the week that you take time off. John Piper, he said that he doesn't take his day off on Sunday because he works really on Sunday. He's a pastor, right? His day off is Monday. And he says he kicks his leg back up and just chills out. Now, that's kind of a paraphrase. He didn't say chills out, but basically that's what he said. So what constitutes work and rest, or what should we and should not do on these days, is a matter of conscience. It is not the same for everyone. Your idea of rest may not be the same for the other person. Your idea of work may not be the same for the other person. When we rest, we should rest in a way that re-energizes us for the rest of the week. On days we dedicate to the Lord, it should include corporate worship with other believers in the context of a church, but also personal focus on the Lord. But just as there was a primary point when we were talking about the Israelites and their Sabbath, there's a primary point here, and it's my final point. Just like the Israelites, when we follow through with these principles, we show something to the rest of the world, that our God is trustworthy. That when we trust Him, that we can let go from our work, our studies, our anxieties, our worries, our fears, even for just one day of worship and rest. And that He's faithful. That those things, your life is in His hands. And that, yeah, you can let go. Tonight, you're probably in one of three camps. Perhaps you need to hear, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. Rest. Rest just for a little while. I know you're saying, but this and this and this, but I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do this. God's saying, no. Just rest. I didn't design you to go 24/7. Perhaps you're in the second group tonight, and you forget that actually there was 6 days before that seventh day that said you should be doing work, right? Some of us maybe find ourselves in that camp where like, well, I've kind of been resting all week. No, that's not right either. It's time for you to get up and put your hand to the plow in your studies, at your job, and in doing ministry for the Lord. Third camp, you don't know the Lord. What you may not realize is that you're a slave to sin in this world. And it is an unrelenting taskmaster who will drain you for everything you're worth and take everything out of you and then ask, demand for more. But Jesus calls out saying, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Ultimately, that's the ultimate rest, right? Jesus offers that to all. On this earth, we will have toil, and we will have struggle, and there will be times of rest we can have. But Jesus is our eternal rest. So if you don't know the Lord tonight, then hear this. God loved the world so much, He sent His Son Jesus, who was perfect, who was sinless, who did not toil in slavery to sin. And He died on the cross to take the punishment that we deserved, the payment that we're working at, the payment of sin and trying to be good enough. And he said, lay it down and take up my yoke, which is gentle and light, and I will give you rest. So as the band come forward, let me pray. Father God, thank you that you're so different from the gods of this world. Though some of them may not